Amen. Thank you, Scott. So we were in chapter 11 last week. I'm assuming that people knew that Daniel wasn't going to be here, so they decided not to show up. No, they may just come in late. That'd be perfect. I kind of feel naked up here without Daniel. Daniel, would you mind leading off? He always led off. We're in chapter 11 last week. It is my favorite chapter in the entire Bible, and it deals with the faithful people who have already lived. And he's going to start chapter 13 with the idea that these faithful people are in this arena, and in this arena they are our witnesses as we run the race of faith also. But as I said in the paper, this all starts really in chapter 10 and verse 19. Let us draw near to God with a true heart in full assurance of faith. And he deals with the heart a lot in Hebrews. If you'll remember, he says, if you hear the voice of the Lord, do not harden your heart. So just thinking about the ideal of listening to the Lord and not hardening our heart when we hear it is a very important concept for Christians, and especially all of us today. So we're going to talk about this athletic games. And if you're an athlete, then you kind of got that, and it won't be a big deal. About this discipline. It's good to have my son here this morning, see? Okay, well, chapter 12, Hebrews chapter 12, and starting with verse 1. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and seated at the right hand of the throne of God. And then he goes on and talks about some things that we might be weary of doing. So he talks about these hindrances and every weight. You know, it's the ideal is, I don't know if you ever ran track, but I'm sure a lot of you did, and you would put a weight on, or I threw, so always used, instead of using a 12-pound, I use a 16-pound. If you use a 16-pound, you use a 20-pound. It was the idea to throw off the weight. It was a way to put something on and to make it heavier, to do better, but he says you got to throw those weights off, right? That's what he says, to run this race of faith. And the first question that we have is, what are the hindrances or every weight we must lay aside? So just thinking about that and thinking about, I saw a show one time, it's called Fireproof, and this guy had gotten on the internet, kind of got hooked to pornography. I don't know if y'all saw it. It's really a neat show. Him and his wife, he just doesn't think his wife is doing him right, so he justifies what he's doing. And finally, he wants to be right with his wife and with God, and he takes the computer outside, and he takes a bat, and he beats it to smithereens. That's laying aside a weight, right? I mean, something with him, this computer somehow had grabbed a hold of him and was dragging him to the ground. He said, I'm not going to do it anymore. I want you to listen to this. In 1 Peter 2, he says, we are foreigners and exiles, and we need to abstain from sinful desires that war against the soul. We need to abstain from sinful desires that war against the soul. And there's much to be said about this whole idea that we war against the flesh and the spirit war against each other. And I guess the first question, just the idea, what are the hindrances that we must lay aside? And if we don't really understand that, then the verse doesn't mean much. So I'm sure that you've got the email earlier and that you read chapter 12 and that you have some things that we need to lay aside. So that's, and if I had the board up here, which I don't have it, and I don't have Daniel, we'd write those on the board. So what do we need to lay aside? What are the sins that are so easily, these weights and sin that so easily entangle us and ensnare us and stop us from running the race? Pride. So pride is a big issue. Well, not for me, of course, but for a lot of people, pride is a big issue. Yeah, where that we have done it ourselves, and we're going to do it ourselves. Think about our running the race anyway. Is can you run this race, a spiritual race, without help from the Lord? No, you're going to fail. And many of us said, no, I can do it myself. I'll control myself. I control my own flesh. He says you can't do it by yourself. Pride of life. What else? Aaron, did you have something? Covetousness. Okay, well, the ideal that there's, yeah. So maybe that's what he was dealing with the rich young ruler, maybe. He says, I want you to go sell all you have because really you rely on your riches more than you would ever rely on me. What other hindrances do we have to lay off? What hindrances have you laid off? Maybe that's too personal. Yeah, Jenny. Sure. Yeah, just this idea that the cares of the world just smoke us, right? Sometimes we don't have time to think about God because we're just, there's too many problems. Am I going to pay the bills? I've already got so many. You know, I hate debt in the first place, right? But debt just kind of consumes you. No, absolutely. What else? Yeah, yeah. So how did you put that away? Because I'm still struggling. How did you take that off and you kind of threw that away? How'd you do that? Yeah. No, the minute you think you won, you've lost, right? Yeah, no, absolutely. Telling. Yeah. So in catastrophes, does that just all bring that back to life? It kind of brings us back? Boy, isn't that the truth? Yeah. Anybody here have to lay off some family ties? That really the family's destroying me. I can't let them do that. Or my friends, or my job. Has anybody here lost a job, just said, I'm leaving this job? It is destroying my faith and who I am. He says here, you got to throw away all those hindrances that cause you so you can't run the race. Right? He says now, somebody has something? He says, we have these witnesses that are watching, and there's two things that could be happening. They're watching our behavior, and I don't think that's really what it is, but they testify of an example and an encouragement of people who can do it. What do you know about all the people of faith in chapter 11? What's one thing you absolutely know about them? They endured. I mean, they struggled, and they fail. Though a righteous man may fall seven times, yet he rises again. The truth is, they just said, I will never quit on the Lord, right? I mean, they failed. They endured. They persevered. Have you ever been to a place where you were really at a place you said, I'm just not going to do it. I can't do it. I mean, I am so pitiful. The Lord, how could the Lord even love me? Well, so did they. David did. Abraham. I mean, just think about all those people that were listed in Hebrews 11. Which makes it easier, I think. And I talked about this last time. I think what they say as witnesses is, if I can do it, so can you. But I think what we say is, if they can do it, so can I. If they can do it, I can too. Was there something miraculous about the people listed in this chapter 11? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're not Superman. I mean, they sure are good people who overcame a lot, right? I mean, when you think about that, they were flogged and sawn asunder, and they were mocked, and they were treated like they were dogs, and you say, how did they do that and still remain faithful to God, is a big deal. So they endured, and they just said, I will never quit. One of the things I think we have to do as Christians is we have to determine that I will never, ever, ever quit. I think it's easy sometimes in the middle of the battle, especially when this ideal of warring against the soul, I think it's easy for us to say, I don't know if I can do it or not. I don't know if I can finish the race. And he says, you remember in chapter 11, it speaks many times about the people who receive the reward are the ones that never quit, right? It wasn't imperfection, it's the fact that they never quit. Let's run with endurance. Just speaking of not quitting, I think, the race that's set before us in verse 2, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. Why do we look for Jesus? Why is it required? Why is it important that we look to Jesus? He definitely sits at the right hand of God, right? And that's the only way we can get there. Why else? He definitely, in Ephesians, says, listen, this is the bar. That's the bar you're trying to get to. You need to look like his life, right, of self-sacrifice and pleasing of the Lord and all the things that go with it. What else? He is the true example. Listen to this. Consider him, in verse 3, consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself so that you may not grow weary and faint-hearted. Why would it help us not to grow weary in what we do, weary in our well-doing to God? Why would it help us to look at Jesus? By what he suffered. Yeah, he even tells these people, you haven't shed blood yet. And I will tell you what he would tell us is, you haven't suffered to the bloodshed either here, right? It's on the other side. We have it way too good. Sometimes we don't see heaven as really the ultimate place for us because it's pretty good here, right? Let me ask you something. If you were broke tomorrow and we had nothing, we just had to scrounge for food, do you think you'd have more presence with God or would that push you away? Yeah. Haven't you ever been sick where you just didn't know if you were going to recover or not? I mean, where you were just... Now, I've been sick, and I'm not good with pain, so I just want you to know what I'm saying here is not that good. But I have been sick where I said, Lord, if there's any way, you can just take me now. Isn't that terrible? But, I mean, there's no place else to turn where the doctor's tried. He can't make it any better. Tim? Absolutely, yeah. Did he struggle? Let me read this weakness. So he says, for because he himself also suffered when tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted. So he knows what it's like to be tempted. I mean, have you suffered when you were tempted? I mean, has anybody here suffered when they were tempted to do what was wrong and leave the Lord? Have you suffered it through that going, why am I this way? What is happening here? Have you ever done that? In the garden, what did Jesus say? Man, if there's a way to do this differently, right? He was suffering. He was suffering. He knew what he was going to endure. Right. No, absolutely. No. I hate to say I've given in. Have y'all ever been felt like you were drug away or something just kind of allured you and allured you and allured you and finally something happened? Have you ever been there? Have y'all been there? I mean, when was the last time you sinned? Because we know what they are. We know when we do it, right? So he says, I want you to fix your eyes on Jesus. And I want you to look away from every other thing. What would we, if we fix our eyes on Jesus, what are we looking away from? Temptation. We're looking away from temptation. I'm looking at Jesus. I'm looking away from temptation. What else? Yes, that's right. That was a big temptation for her to see what, you know, these people she knew. We look away from all the problems and all the suffering and death and disease and all the things that come with being a Christian and being part of the family of humankind. And then it says he's the founder and perfecter of our faith, and I think it's important just for a second to talk about that. I mean, the ideal he's the founder is that he's the first one who by faith lived according to the will of God, died, and now he's already received the reward. He's the first. And we all follow in that example. Without that example, we could never have done it either, right? He's the first, and he's the first and the beginning, so he's the finisher of the faith too. He's the one who did all those things. And then he says in verse 3 that I don't want you to grow weary. Don't grow weary. Look into Jesus. Don't grow weary and faint-hearted. Why would we grow weary in our service to the Lord? Because it's hard. Take our eyes off the goal. It's hard. Sometimes it's hard, and sometimes we forget, right? We live in this world, and things. And first of all, things are pretty good, right? And we have it pretty good, better than anyone ever, right? And he says it's hard for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. If it weren't for Jesus, you couldn't do it. Go ahead, Johnny. Yeah, absolutely. Boy, we got these burdens that kind of weigh on us, and sometimes we make them bigger than they really are, right? My mother, she worries about everything. I'm going, quit. 80% of the things you worry about never happen, and the other 20%, it doesn't matter. You can't do anything about them, right? Yeah, does somebody have something over here?
passage he brought up, he said, where some scoffers are going to come, and they may even be among us, where he said, where's the promise of his coming? So, why keep on?
Right. Oh, absolutely. We grow weary when is he going to do, when is he going to correct all these things, right? Do you grow weary every once in a while with your own brethren that just, they wear you out? I mean, people just not what they should be. I'm not what I should be. Do they just kind of wear you out? Have y'all ever had brethren that have just wore you out and you just go, I'm telling you, I don't know if I can handle any more of it. I know people who have lost their faith from it, where the brethren just haven't treated them right, and they just lost their faith. And I'm just going, you're going to let a brother who's not what they should be, that's going to destroy your faith? Are you telling me that? Well, yeah, that's exactly right. It is hard. Yeah.
I mean, the spirit of the context, running a race, I think it fits.
You get tired. Oh. I was just thinking, just when was the last time, spiritually, you just were wore out? Yeah, George?
So much.
Yeah.
I think last week, when y'all looked at chapter 11, y'all looked at something else. And what I have to mention here, you're talking about looking at Jesus.
Sure.
And all these people, several of them were highlighted in chapter 11, they were looking for something better, looking for the Lord, looking for that scene.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's funny because there are scriptures that talk about looking for the reward, and for sure these people did. But I think maybe this is going back to remembering his affliction. I mean, the idea that if you can remember what he did for you, then what you suffer is nothing compared to what he suffers, right? And I think there is something to be said when I'm in the midst of all of it that I look to Jesus, what he's done for me.
Yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely.
I think that also tells us too. I mean, he endured and finished, and you can endure.
No, absolutely. I think that's the purpose of all the folks listed in Hebrews 11, that they started and they finished and they struggled through all. I mean, just think about all their lives, and Jesus struggled in his life too, here, right? And now he's there to help us. And he does in verse 4, he says, struggling against sin. Faithfulness is referred to as a struggle. What is it we're struggling with? What's the biggest struggle you have in your walk with Christ? I've talked about this a lot. I'm curious about you, but what's the biggest struggle you have as your walk with Christ? Jordan? Yeah. Yes, it would. Yeah. Yes. I'm going to vote for that one, too. If I had to do it all over again, once you kind of drowned while you were there, and when you came back up, that would be perfect for me, too. Yeah. What's your biggest struggle? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. 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 Me, too. Sorry. Yeah, and that's after we commit not to, for me. So, yeah, Jimmy. Right, right. Right, right. Yeah. That's what he ends up telling Job too, right? Is you just need to have faith in me. I mean, I know you have all these questions to have faith in me. Well, let me tell you, for me, I am the most difficult person I have ever dealt with. I mean, do you feel that way about yourself? I promise I'm not going to do this. I promise that I'm going to do this. I promise I'm going to get it now. I get up and read my Bible and all, but I mean, it took a decade or so for me to ever make it a habit. I mean, it's like I struggle with me. I don't struggle with you. I struggle with me. And I'm tired of it. You know, sometimes, and I think that's the reason I can say at the end that, man, the struggles, I see the rest one day that I don't have to fight with my own fleshly desires to do what I really want to do. It would be a great day for me for that rest. Would it for you? And maybe you're not that person. Maybe you do exactly how you determine that this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do this for the Lord. I'm going to do it every day. Maybe that's who you are. But most of us are not. The flesh gets in the way. As soon as I make a commitment, somebody goes to war with me to try to get me not to do it. Do you feel that? Any thoughts about that? It's me. Sure. No, me and you both. Me and you both. Well, he's gonna transition into this, the ideal of discipline, and I want to make sure that we cover this ideal of discipline. I don't think it's an easy concept for any of us to think about. The Lord disciplines and trains those he loves. Look at verse 6. Verse 5, and have you forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as sons? My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary when reproved by him, for the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. And then he talks about fathers doing it to their sons, and they loved him, and why wouldn't we love the Lord? And this discipline could be defined as discipline, training, education, instruction, preparation. Subjection to difficulty or a challenge in order to produce and demonstrate strength. So the ideal is there's these challenges that either help you overcome some things or show that you're where you should be, and that's how God acts and works. The ideal of improper training leads to retention of bad habits and ultimately to failure. If you never train to be spiritually godly, then how could you ever be ready for the things that you're going to be posed with? And hardships are God's process of education of worldly people into becoming mature spiritual people. I think all those are true. And I think this ideal reveals our weaknesses, and it gives us an opportunity to demonstrate our strengths. What in the world are these disciplines that the Lord puts on us? So the question is this, what are the disciplines of the Lord? Verse 6-11. And I'll take a couple of thoughts there. Yeah, Tony. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I'd rather not have that one, right? No, absolutely. There's consequences to decisions that sometimes could just flat bury us, right? He talks about later this ideal of Esau. Do you remember that? So Esau sells his birthright for a cup of stew, and then he wants it back, but it's too late. And he refers to that in the same way as fornication. He says, now people fornicate for a few minutes of pleasure and they give up their eternity. Can you believe somebody's so dumb? Yes, I can believe it. Can't you? Let me ask you this, just in that whole regard, just the ideal of discipline and the ideal of making choices. What choice have you made before for momentary pleasure that really and truly you could have cost your soul because you did it? And looking back, you'd go, can you believe I did that? Have y'all done that? What other disciplines are there? Sure. Oh, it is. Now, you know, he talks about younger people not doing that. so that you don't suffer the consequences when you're older. And you might even look at those lives, including mine, who said, there's some consequences I did when I was young, I still struggle through today, right? There's some things I saw, some things I did, some things I wanted to do that I still struggle with today. And I think one of the things you think about, too, is that when I think I am just where I need to be, Satan knows where to get me. And if either I'm ready or I'm not. Just think about all the people listed in Hebrews 11. I mean, these people struggled to the nth, too, till they were dead. They were older when this happened. You think about Sarah and Abraham. They were older when they gave up on the Lord's giving them a child, and so they circumvented. It wasn't like they were kids. They were older. So, what other disciplines? Yeah. Sure. Sure, absolutely. Sure. No, and I'll talk about that today. A kid who says, a young man who says, I'm going to be a virgin by the time I'm married, no matter what. They'll be ridiculed and mocked and made fun of as though something's wrong with him, right? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. How many times have you taken the Lord's Supper and you said, Lord, I'm not what I should be? And I mean, it's not that you shouldn't partake, I don't think. It's a matter of I re-examine myself, right? Well, think about 5 and verse 8 where he says that the Lord learned obedience by the things that he suffered. What was the training for the Lord while he was here? What caused his best training and discipline and preparation? The things that he suffered, yeah. And we could talk about those, and maybe there are some worldly things, and maybe there are some things that really do cause you to lose your faith. But what sufferings really? What were the sufferings? What are the sufferings that really cause you the most grief in your walk? Boy, that's true. Absolutely. Yeah, it's the ones that really I can't tell another soul but me and the Lord. Boy, those are the worst. The ones that aren't like that where I can go say, man, I got to have your help. I mean, you know, there are some sufferings that you're going through that really you don't feel good about telling anybody about it but the Lord, right? And that's hard when you're by yourself, I think. Yeah. Well, let's look at just a few passages real quick. If somebody would look, Byron, would you do 1 Peter 1, verse 6 and 7? 6 and 7. Yeah.
In this you greatly rejoice and help one another, that we may be freed by manifold temptations. But the genuineness of your faith be much more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested with fire, and the sound of praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ.
So the testing of their faith was various trials and temptations. Just think about it. Various trials and temptations. That's what made them what they should be, right? Let me see. If you have no trials and no temptations and no problems, you don't have much of a testimony. You have a testimony because you've gone through a lot, right? Jesus had a testimony because he went through a lot. Would you read James 1 and verse 2? 2 through 4, I guess. No, Andrew, I'm sorry. Yes, sir. So what are the trials that you undergo that really test your faith and cause you to be to persevere? What are those? What's the testing? What is it? I used to have a real temper, so if somebody got in my face, I was going to be in their face. Listen, sooner or later, you got to say, I'm done with that. Sooner or later, you have to say, I'm done. I'm not doing that anymore. I'm not going to be that same person. Right? Boy, that was a testing that took a lot. Because you can tell when I get mad, I mean my face gets red a lot anyway, but my face just gets red and my heart beats, and I'd say, nope, not doing it. I'm just flat not doing it. And so I used to have road rage. Josh, I'm sorry. I used to have road rage, and I still feel it come on today, but I refused. I'm going to let them in. I don't care what they're doing. I'm letting anybody in. I'm just not going to be that kind of person. You think about the perseverance it takes to be that kind of person when that's not who you are. Linda, would you mind reading James 1, verse 12? Yes, ma'am.
Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial, for when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him.
Yeah. So the greatest trials that you have suffered as being a Christian, what have they done for you? What are the trials? How do you recognize that is one of them right here? I mean, this is one. This is my trial, and I know if I persevere that I have passed the test. Or do we just say, you know what, every test I fail, really and truly, all the tests I just fail. I still talk like the world. When I get angry, I act like the world. When I turn the TV on, I leave it on shows I shouldn't watch. I go to movies I promise I'm not going to watch. I mean, how do we overcome those? He says that's who we ought to be, right? And I love this ideal that God would not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able to bear, right? What does he allows us to be tempted? Tell me how are we trained by God? He allows us to be tempted. He allows it. Somebody says, well, he does not tempt with sin, but he allows the devil to work on us. He says, I won't let him do more than he can do than you can overcome. Have you ever been there and you said, Lord, you've given me more than I can do? The temptation is greater than I can bear. And he says, no, it's not. I'll find a way for you to escape. So this ideal of proper discipline leads to proper conduct, and we kind of change who we are. So the life of a Christian is all about change anyway, right? The life of a Christian is about change. I cannot be the same person I was before I became a Christian and be right with God. Is that true? I mean, that's who we are, right? So we've come again today, not just to worship the Lord, but maybe to hear something that someone says or something from the Word that says, you know what, I have more change to make to be like Jesus. Who in here is just there? I mean, they're at where Jesus was. You're right there. I mean, I've just reached this new level, and I think like Jesus. I act like Jesus. When I see people, I see them like he saw them. Do you know anybody like that? If they said they were, we'd probably say, well, be prepared, right? How easy is it for us to live as Christians in this country? Pretty easy. Pretty easy. Maybe soon what we say is going to be hate speech. It won't be so easy. What happens when some of the things that we teach and practice becomes hate speech? What are we going to do? Just quiet down? So that's, you know, well, okay, well, I can't talk about that anymore. I mean, that day could be coming, right? I love this, really. We rarely relish in trials and hardships. But that's what trains us to be people of character. When was the last time you had some hardships and some trials and you said, this has been so good for me and my relationship with my God? When was the last time? Huh? All the time. Have you had that? Have you had the experience that says, you know what, I've been through something here that's terrible. And I'm telling you, it's pushed me closer to the Lord. Yeah. I bet that would do it. I'm assuming sickness does that. I mean, sickness kind of drives you, especially where it's like it's just more than you can bear, right? Tim? Well, we adopted a 5-year-old son that had been sexually abused, all kinds of things. And you haven't met him because he hadn't been here. We're a little bit distant right this minute. But in that time frame of those trials, the first year was the worst year. I thought he was the worst child I ever met in my life. He turned out to be a great child, by the way. But I'll tell you, after we got through it, Tammy and I both would say, where would we have been without him? The trials and tribulations and patience. Before him, no patience here. I mean, not with Josh. No patience with Josh. I mean, poor Josh, right? You know? We rarely think about the trials and what they made of us while we went through it. Sometimes we go back and look and say, I hope that never happens to me again. But I don't know if we really look at it, of what it produced, what character, what genuine character it produced while it happened. Is that true? You would not be much if you have no test. The person that has no test, I mean, just doesn't have much testimony, right? Number three, to see the Lord, what must we do? It is in verse 14. To see the Lord, what must we do? Absolutely, yeah. What does it say in verse 14? Yeah, so if we had the board up here, we'd just say, strive to be at peace with all men and to live lives that are holy. He says you cannot see the Lord unless you have those two going on, right? You have to have peace. Now, this was peace with mankind when they are suffering a lot of persecution. The ideal is somebody is really treating me in a way that's not right, and I have to live at peace with all men. As best, you know, think about 1 Peter. Think about Romans 12 and verse 17. You know, just living at peace with all men as best that I can do. When we are mistreated and when we're scorned, how do people react to mistreatment that's caused because I love the Lord? How do we do that? Romans 12 says, repay no one evil for evil, but give thought about honoring all those and doing good to those. And then he talks about holiness, avoid the defilement of the world, and thus live holy and sanctified lives. Holy people do not live like the world around them. So living at peace with people who maybe have mistreated us, and then living lives that are holy. And this is about us being holy. How is it that we live lives that are holy? What do we do to live lives that are holy and righteous before God? Yeah, we don't give in. So if this is, let's just say that this is the line between good and evil. I don't know if you have a line. Spiritual people, are they closer to the line or farther away from the line? I mean, as you know the truth, do you try to get close to the line? Because I know it. I just know so much more. Or do spiritual people just get away from the line? They get away from the line. Holiness is as separate from the world as we can get. Someone says, well, they're binding where there's no... No, they're not binding. They're saying, there's nothing good. That does not get me closer to the Lord. That alcohol, that place I go, the movies I watch. Somebody says, well, I can watch that movie and be a Christian. Okay, well, I can't. I want to be holy in my thoughts and how I feel and what I do, right? Do you see your lives as being people who strive to be holy? Sure. How do you live lives that are holy? I mean, how do you do it? What's your determination to be holy and separate from the world? Or really and truly, that's not who we are. We're just going to do kind of what the world does, and it's really not about myself being holy. Yeah, TJ? Yeah, you got to put off the flesh. Well, I get up every morning, I'm still wearing it, though. You say, you, the issue? Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. That's right. That's right. We're going to talk about that in the sermon. I apologize. I'm preaching this morning. I apologize already. I did not plan that. No, absolutely. I think one thing somebody could say is, I just want to look at your calendar, and I can tell where you put God, right? I can tell what time you have spent for the spiritual things within your calendar and know who you are. Is that true? Is that true or not? I just look at your calendar. Sure. Well, godliness is putting God in the smallest of decisions, right? Including God. I totally agree with that. That's right. Well, I think that is such a key issue, is when I know myself, you may be able to do that. There's no way I can, right? Boy, I think that is so true. Know thyself. I think there's plenty to be said about that, Scott. Absolutely. Now, if we live our lives like that, we will be different people, right? Have you ever been to a movie and you just got up and said, nope, can't do this one. I will not hear the Lord's name in vain, right? I won't do that. Think about, you know. I mean, we can know by seeing what you watch, what you read, where you go, what you say, and who you're around. You can know whether somebody really loves the Lord or not. Can't you? Is that true? That's how we judge ourselves. Sir, yeah. And being holy in that, yeah.
Otherwise, I think sometimes we have too much of a tendency to carry our power in the crowd.
Right.
Because we're going to make sure that we have the right people around us.
Yeah.
And we're going
to
make sure that we're good. Our family's good. And I'm not going to take any risk.
Right. No, and when we, that's right. And when we do that, you will have obstacles and sufferings because people will not accept it, right? Being holy in an unholy world is what we're called to be. Yeah, I could go to, yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. We ought to consider joy. He says, consider joy when you suffer for the cause of the Lord. Yeah. All right, well, thank you for your attention and comments. Thank you. We'll be in chapter 13 next week. Daniel, be back.